Hello, everybody here? Good. Okay. Welcome. This is my last talk at TechEd. You know, there's this joke we have when you have a bad business trip. You say, I spent a week in Memphis last week, you know, last day, you know, one day. And this is like a week in Madrid. Today I came in yesterday morning. This will be my fourth talk. And then I'm done. So I think this will be either my best or my worst. You'll get to decide. So this is the unplugged session. And the way this happened was I was in Norway given a keynote this fall, or sorry, this winter. And during my keynote, I was asked to give a keynote and then a beginner's talk on PowerShell. And so during my talk, the keynote, I asked people how many people knew PowerShell. And basically, everyone raised their hands. That doesn't bode well for my beginner talk. Then that evening, we had a panel session where they were asking people, "Oh, what was your favorite PowerShell commandlet?" Which seemed like an odd question, but somebody was asking, "Oh, they use the AD commandlets all the time," and somebody else used some security commandlets all the time. And it got to me, and they said, "Well, Jeffrey, what commandlet do you use the most?" And I said, "Well, help." And everybody laughed, and they thought it was a joke, like the inventor of PowerShell uses help. It's like, oh, I see, you don't get it. And so I used these two thoughts to then completely redo my talk for the next day, my beginner's talk, and I did basically an unplugged version, which was basically that says, hey, I'm going to teach you how to learn PowerShell. And you'll see that get help is what it's all about. In fact, you know, in my previous talk, I was talking about how they recently did a study a couple years ago where they examined expert Unix admins versus beginners Unix admins. And they came to a conclusion, and I laughed when I read it because it was exactly the same study, exactly the same conclusion from about 30 years ago. And that was, if you take an advanced Unix admin and you with a beginner and you put them down and you have them do a written test, there's very little difference between the two groups. And so you might say, yeah, these Unix admins, they're overrated. You know, why am I paying them so much money? Blah, blah, blah. But then you take the same people and you put them in front of a system and you test them. And you see this incredible difference in performance. And so what's going on there is it turns out that Unix admins are particularly good at figuring things out. It's not that they remember things. What use is that? Right? Things constantly change. But they're extremely good at figuring things out. And so it is with PowerShell. You know, you could go and you could take one of these things and try and take a lot of notes and memorize things. That is not worth anything at all. The most important lesson you can learn is how to learn PowerShell. And so that's what this session is going to be all about, is to how to learn PowerShell. Okay, so that's it, PowerShell Unplugged. Now you'll see, here's it. This is it. This is my entire talk. There's four things you got to learn. Get help. Three things, get member and get PS Drive. Okay, so we could call it a day, but why don't we take a few minutes and I'll show you some of my favorite things. Okay, so the first thing is, now I'm going to show you the ISC. There's also the other command line interface, but I'll use this one. The first thing to realize is that, by the way, I have no script, like none. I've got a few notes, but I have no script, so this could go sort of anywhere. And in particular, I thought it was very important, you will see me make mistakes. I think it's very important that you see, you know, inventor of PowerShell, distinguished engineer, lead architect for Windows Server and System Center Data Center, and I make mistakes all the time. I'm constantly screwing up, constantly getting the names of things wrong, can't type things, et cetera. I think it's important for you to see that unvarnished, you know, not like all the slick and demo thing where you see, oh, those guys are great, and when I try and do it, it's a problem. No. That's the way it works. There's constantly dealing with troubles. And I wanted you to see that. So you'll see lots of mistakes. So the first thing to get in focus is that PowerShell is an interactive shell. And you should do that, right? You want to explore with it, right? So you type, come here, and you can do things like type notepad, right? Blah, blah, blah. You can come in, you can start, you can run hostname, right? Calc. All those interactive things that you used to be able to do, you can continue to do using PowerShell. That's great. However, there's this new thing. And this new thing are things called commandlets. Now, the problem is, Notepad, Calc, those are sort of obvious. But by the way, let me first understand my audience. How many of you are beginning PowerShell, beginner PowerShells? Okay? How many of you are advanced? Okay. So there's going to be a little bit of both for each of you. If you're a beginner, trust me, there's some things you're not going to get. If you're an advanced guy, trust me, there's probably going to be some things you're not going to get. That's okay. The key things you're going to get, everybody's going to get. It's a spirit of exploration and the tools of exploration. Now, also, how many of you have a Unix background? Okay, great. So if you wanted to search for something in Unix, you'd type grep. Now, is that obvious to anybody? Grep. Or maybe you'd pipe it to awk, right? You know how they got the name awk? It was the initials of the guys who wrote the program, AWK, Aho, somebody in Kernighan. Anyway, so just complete random world. There's no way, you know, it's very difficult to remember that world. We wanted a world that was regular and easy to remember, right? We know that your hair's on fire, that the last thing in the world you want to do is invest in learning some new technology. And so we have this thing we call the sacred vow. The sacred vow is you spend the time learning PowerShell, and we vow to make that one of the best investments you've ever made, because we're going to reuse the concepts over and over and over again so that your investment in learning gets applied over and over and over again. Okay, so the first is we have a very regular syntax, right? So we have this notion of verb-noun-parameter. So I say get process minus name star SS. Okay, so look at that, nice flow. Now, point out here, processes are like, that's the thing you want to go explore, right? So as you learn PowerShell, I encourage you to use processes. Why? Because everybody has them, it's relatively safe, and there's just a ton there, right? I used to do karate, and there was this beginner kata they called Sanchin, and they said even the most experts of experts still had lots to learn in Sanchin, and the very beginner form, everything is encapsulated in it. And for us, it's processes. Everything about PowerShell is expressed through get process and the process object. So it's really worth exploring. Sometimes I see these notes like, why do you just keep showing get process? It's because everything's there. Just explore. Okay, so there's this regular verb, noun, name, process, right? And of course, it just has to be enough of the name to disambiguate. So we could say name, or again, I'm a pretty flawed person. You know, sometimes I don't spell it right. And we support positional parameters, right? So, hey, just star SS. And we also support something called aliases. Aliases are for shorthands, right? So you can just type GPS star SS. Now notice, I had wildcards there. Now if you're a Unix guy, you're used to wildcards. Wildcards only apply to the file system. That's because you could call it a feature, or I call it a flaw, of their architecture. Our architecture allows us to use wildcards in lots of places to give you extraordinary power. But with that power comes responsibility. You want to watch out. Sometimes it can be a sharp tool. So anyway, the point of this is that there's different modes with PowerShell. If you're an expert admin and you're just going at the interactive shell, something like this, GPS star SS, is very nice, it's very fast, okay? But if you're writing a script that somebody else is going to use and it's 2 o'clock in the morning and everything's gone to hell and they're trying to figure out why, things like this is not your friend. You want to be able to say, you want to see scripts that look like this. Process minus name star SS. Okay, you want to see things like that. So you have the different modes. Okay, now next is we have pipelines. Now, if you're a Unix guy, you know they have compositional model, right? So what's the whole point? How did PowerShell get started? And it got started, right? Most of the team has deep Unix background. And the project started when I did a deep rethink of the Unix compositional model. In fact, it was because of a failure I had, right? The failure was when I came to the company, I tried to get the Unix tools shipped as part of Windows, right? Corn Shell, Bash, Awk Grepset, tried to get those installed on Windows. We had this thing serviceable for Unix. Turns out I failed because we weren't 100% sure of the IP, that it was safe to do that. And so what we did instead was we made it a free download. So did anybody ever download the services for Unix stuff? Yeah, great stuff. However, ultimately failed. And this is the difference between Windows and Linux or Unix. Linux is a document-oriented operating system. everything's in a document. File system, it's an etcfs tab. Users, etc users. Groups, etc groups, etc. And because everything's in a document, in a file, tools like op, grep, and sed are management tools. But when I took those same management tools and put them on Windows, they were useless, right? Because awk didn't work against the registry, sed didn't work against WMI, grep didn't work against Active Directory, because we are an API-oriented system. Now, it turns out there's a lot of great advantages to each system, but the key thing was that those, you know, the model didn't work for us. So I did a deep rethink of the model, like, okay, so what is the Unix compositional model, and how do we apply something like that to Windows? And so in Unix, it's all about A pipe to B, pipe to C. And I thought to myself, well, why do people do that? And the answer, sometimes you just want to stop and ask yourself dumb questions, like give yourself permission to ask dumb questions, because sometimes you'll come up with dumb answers, but sometimes you get some real deep insights, and that's what happened in this case. I said, well, why don't they do that? And the answer was, well, because A didn't do what you wanted to do. If you typed A and it did what you wanted to do, you'd be done. So I said, okay, sort of obvious, but why didn't A do what you wanted to do? Now, this is where it got interesting. There were two answers. The first was the traditional Unix answer. Traditional Unix answer says this: look, the world changes all the time. There's no way you can understand the scenarios and develop a solution for those scenarios. So instead, you take a toolkit approach to the problem where you have very discrete tools that do exactly one thing, and then you stitch them together through pipelines and interactive compositional models to solve novel problems. So as a new problem comes up, you take these tools, you pipe them together, A pipe to C, or D pipe to B, and things like that, to solve unique problems. So that's the traditional answer. But there was a different answer, and this was the heart of PowerShell. The different answer was that A pipe to B pipe to C, A doesn't do what you want it to do because it tightly binds three separate things into one. This is my joke. My joke is, you know, what's architecture? People ask me, you know, people growing up in the career want mentoring. They say, what's architecture? And I said, architecture is the art of deciding when one thing should be two and two things should be one. Okay? So in this case, we have three things that are one when in fact they should be three. So A doesn't do what you want it to do because it tightly binds getting a set of objects, processing those objects, and outputting those objects as text. So when we say A doesn't do what we want it to do, what we're really saying is, I got the wrong objects, or I didn't process them the way I wanted to, or I didn't output them as text the way I wanted to. So seen in that light, when you take A and you pipe it to B and C, what you're really doing is you're taking that text and you're trying to reverse engineer your way back to the original objects to do one of those steps differently. Okay? And we call this prayer-based parsing. You got to take the text and pray you get it right, right? Go over 20, you cut off three lines, like here, what is that? So one, two, three lines. You cut off three lines, and you say you want to get the CPU. You'd go over, well, how many columns is that? I don't know. 26, 27, oh, wait, no, I don't know. And anyway, so it's prayer-based parsing to try and reverse engineer your way back to the original objects. So with PowerShell, the insight was, this is one thing where there should be three. The pipeline belongs between the getting the processes, the processing, and the outputting. Okay? And that's what PowerShell is. It's as simple as that. Really small, simple question derived from asking, stepping back and asking, you know, what seems like a dumb question. Okay? So in fact, when I do this get process, okay, it looks like text. My friends, that is not text. Looks like text. It is not text. In fact, what happens is when I pipe get process, it outputs a set of objects. And when those objects hit the console, this host, the host says, what the heck am I going to do with those things? People don't understand objects. So the host turns it into text. Okay, by the way, as soon as it turns into text, it's very difficult to process. It's just like Unix. But until you turn it into text, it's really powerful. Now, so imagine that, by the way, so what is an object, right? People hear object and they freak, like, oh, you want me to learn objects? What are you talking about? I'm just an admin. No. Objects dramatically simplify your life, okay? So let's take this. We have handles, okay? That's the number of resources that this thing consumes. So let's say I got all the processes, and I wanted to get the processes where the handles were over 1,000, were greater than 1,000. How do you do that? And the answer is where handles greater than 1,000. You just type it. You say, well, that's great. But then you want them sorted by handles. So what do? And the answer is you sort it by handles. Oh, that's cool. Except I wanted to format it as a table, and all I wanted was the handles and the process name. Oh, so you wanted to say format as a table, the handles, and the process name. Well, that's great, but it looks like crap. Oh, yeah, you want to do auto-size it. Yeah. Okay? So look at what we did. Because of the power of objects, we're able to produce a world that allows you to think about what you want, type it, and get it. It's that simple. Okay? By the way, that's all for you beginners. I know you advanced guys are bored. This is, now we kick it off. Now we have some fun. Now, these objects are objects, and you can have a blast with these things. I mean, it's really, by the way, one thing I want to express is how fun PowerShell is. I mean, it's just a blast. So the question is, well, how did I know what I could do with this object? One simple answer is, take a look at the titles. These are properties. Okay, typically they're properties. The other way to do it is to say get process, pipe to get member. Remember I mentioned there were three things you gotta learn? Get help, get member, and get PS drive. So this is the first one, get member. And what this does is goes in and tells you what this thing is. It's a system diagnostic process. That's a type. You don't care about that. But look, it shows you it has all these properties, alias properties. It's got events. It got methods. It has all these properties, etc. And then you can party on those things, right? So you can say, by the way, Lee Holmes has a great book, The PowerShell Cookbook. And in it, I stole one of his scripts. He's got this script called Show Object. And it's a wonderful technique to go explore the system. So you say /show object GPS. Oops. And what this does is it shows you all the process objects and shows you all the properties, the name, the path, the company. Oh, look at this. So this process, BTWDNS, is from Broadcom. I didn't know that. So that's interesting. So that's a question. So think about it. What are all the processes? They've got these processes. What company did they come from? By exploring, I was able to see that there's, in fact, a property on processes which say company. So then I could say, well, let's see. Get process, pipe to, format table, name. By the way, FT, format table, name, and then company. So by the way, here, note, I'm going to do control space. IntelliSense. Okay. Company. Nice auto. Oh, look at that. So I see a bunch of Microsofts, a bunch of Lenovos. Okay. So now let's explore this a little bit more because this is kind of fun. Let's say get process and let's sort it by company. And then let's do a format table. But this time let's group it by company. And of course this is going to create a mess. So let's first clear the screen. Dang. Remember I was going to illustrate how many mistakes I make? Okay, so clear the screen, get the processes, sort them by company, format it as a table, and group them by company. Well, look at that. So Synaptics. Oh, I have no idea what the heck those things are. I have no idea what those things are. Now I'm concerned. Okay, Microsoft. Oh, Microsoft Corp versus Corporation. Okay, that's nice consistency, guys. Lenovo. Lenovo Group. Okay, at least we're not in bad company. Nobody seems to get this right. Intel, DisplayLink, Broadcom.
Okay, so this is pretty interesting stuff. But honestly, I have no idea who the heck this thing is or what they're doing. So let's explore. So let's do this get process where the company, where the company, let's say match Synaptic something, and then I would say format table, the process name, and then get this, description, right? And by the way, so that's tab, but if you wanted to, you could just say star, right? Because it's cool. Oh, touchpad enhancements, pointing device. So apparently this thing has a, it's from Synaptic. Okay, I didn't know that. That's what the plug's about. Okay, so the nice thing about this is the exploration. You go, you start looking at things and exploring the system and have lots of fun with it. Okay, now, I also mentioned that these are objects and you can have a ton of fun with these objects. So here, notice I said get process and let's just do star assess. Okay, so I mentioned to you that these are typically, the titles are typically the property names, okay? Sometimes there's a little variation. So notice this K, what the heck's that? Well, it's telling you kilobytes. So let's explore that. So imagine I say format table, name and working set. Well, look here, oh, I see. So in fact, somewhere the working set, that is a property, but look, it's this long thing, whereas here it's showing you it in kilobytes. Okay, so somewhere in the system, we've done some translation, and that's indeed what we do. Sometimes we put K or KB. So what's going on there? Imagine I wanted to do that myself. So what we're really doing here is, here I specify the names of the properties that I want to format. Okay, you can do that, or you can express, or you can specify a couple other things. And one of those things is a hash table, okay? So a hash table is pretty simple. A hash table just looks like that, okay? And it has key value pairs. So what are the key value pairs? Well, of course, you use IntelliSense, control space. Control space. You're killing me. Let's try this again. And okay, I'm not sure why that doesn't work, but it's label equals test, gets the name you want for the column, and then semicolon expression. And here, dollar sign underbar is the current object, and you can do anything you want. And I'll say working set divided by 1 kilobyte. What did I do wrong there? Expression equals. Okay, there you go. Okay, so with this, you can get super powerful. You can do anything. Now, this expression can be any amount of code you want. So by the way, this is where, you know, beginners, we have now switched to the advanced side. Okay, so you can get as complex and as sophisticated as you want with this stuff. You can be, you can write a simple little expression, or you can write a complex script. That script can call other commandlets. You can do anything you want. It's quite powerful. Okay. So next I mentioned get help, get members, and then get PS drive. So let's talk about get PS drive. Okay. So get PS drive shows you the drives in the system. So these drives are very much the traditional drives that you're used to, right? There's the D drive and the C drive. By the way, I heard this great thing the other day. Somebody said, you know you're old when? Some youngster asked, hey, Dad, where are the A and B drives? If you're old, you know that joke. Anyway, indeed, where are the A and B drives? Anyway, so but you notice we have different set of drives. So you see we've got the C drive. But we have other drives. We've got an alias drive, a cert drive, an env drive, etc. Okay? Now here, a lot of people say, oh, you know, PowerShell, you know, it's just copying Linux. Well, it's not at all true. Here, we're copying Apollo. Indeed, the Apollo operating system, I used to work for Apollo, and I worked on what was called the domain object-oriented file system. And so we had a file system. In Unix, you have file systems and you can put lots of different things underneath them, but everything you put underneath a file system looks like a file system. Compare that to Apollo. In Apollo, what we did was we said, hey, we have these various types of file systems, and you can interact with them the same way you interact with a file system, but they aren't file systems. The things you get are different. Okay? So let's get concrete. So you notice here, I have HKLM. Okay? Now, I have this drive, HKLM. It's in the registry. I can interact with that the same way I interact with a regular file system, right? So if you're a Unix guy, you're a Windows guy, you say cd, cert, colon, and then, oh, let's go to, HKLM, software, and then I can do a dir, right? Now, if I do a dir, let's make sure, dir c temp. If I do a dir in C, look what I get. I get files, okay? I get files, right? But if I do a dir in HKLM software, what do I get? And the answer is, I'm getting registry keys. Look at that, HKLM. I'm getting registry keys. If I go to the cert provider, and I do a dir, oh, you know, there's some funky behavior with the cert provider. When I'm in Europe, it always seems to want to time out in a bad way. That makes me look like a jerk for my demos. There you go. Okay? So I interact with things the same way I interact with the file system, right? I can say cat these things, remove them, delete them, rename them, copy them, etc. But they preserve the power and integrity of the thing itself. Now here, let's have some fun. So everybody knows about language, right? So CDC colons. Okay. So you know about this, right? $XXX equals PowerShell rocks. $XXX. Yeah? Okay. So there are variables. Now here is a key thing about PowerShell is a principle that we have. And there's this principle of separation between syntax and semantics. Okay? So, and in particular, what this does is allows you to learn one thing and then to be apply it over and over and over again. And we use this technique in lots of different places. So here, this looks like a variable, right? I think most people think they know what a variable is, right? A variable is what? It's some state, it's in memory, and I can access it through a name. Yeah, that's what a variable is. Well, yeah, but not quite. So what happens if I wanted to say, well, I don't want that variable name to be ZZZ, I want it to be this is a test, right? So $, this is a test. And you can see this isn't gonna work, right? Blah, right? But I might want to do that. I might want to have a variable that has spaces in it. Well, we have a syntax for that, and that's called this. $, these squiggle brackets, and then I'll go and I'll say equals that deserves 3 exclamation points. And so now I've got this variable called PowerShell rocks. Or sorry, this is a test. When I access it, there it is. Now, why do I bring that up? That's still just a variable. It's state in memory. And okay, I did this trick where we have a syntax that allows me to put spaces in it. However, there's an exception here. When you use a syntax, you can use any characters you want. You can use Unicode, you can have Japanese in here, you can have Arabic in here, you can have anything you want in here. Works just fine. There's one exception. You can't use let me prove that to you. Let's be clear. You know, bam. Okay? So very, very cool. One exception, the colon. You got to be careful with the colon. Why do you have to be careful with the colon? Well, let's have some fun. Let's go to temp, and let's do, let's say, 1.5. Do you know about this? 1.5, okay? and then we'll put that in a file like test.txt, cat test.txt, okay? Okay, so just created a temporary file, okay? So if you have a colon, however, it uses the name as a path, and we go and we do essentially a cat of that, okay? So, wait a second, let's see if I got that right. So then I could do something like, okay? So we have this variable syntax. So the syntax stays the same, and yet the background, the way we store the variables, is completely different. Now I've got variables that persist across machines, across session states, across machines. Okay? And so there you go. So this is a technique that we use. We do this often lots of places. Jobs, for instance. In jobs, there are many domain-specific ways to do a job. Right? There's the task scheduler, there's workflow, there's PowerShell remoting, there's WMI, there's Active Directory. Lots of very specific ways. And each one of those things has a unique set of parameters and capabilities and semantics for their jobs. And yet, they all return a PowerShell job, and then there's a common set of PowerShell commandlets that operate against them. Receive the job, stop the job, resume the job, suspend the job, etc. It's all the same. So this is the technique. You learn one thing and then take advantage of the domain-specific things. We do not try and dumb the system down with the least common denominator approach. Now, is that really true? So I said you can interact with the registry or the certificate store the same way as I deal with the file system. But the fact of the matter is that the certificate store has quite a bit richer capabilities than the file system. And in fact, the file system has some capabilities that don't really make sense in the context of the certificate store. So, for instance, imagine I go and I say dir cert colon current user, and I can say, hey, I'd like to find all those things that have a code signing cert. Okay? We'll go do that. And you say, no, wait a second. So I just did a dir, and you're saying that dir has a parameter code signing cert? And the answer is, yes, it does. And again, I hate certificate demos in Europe. For some reason, these things take a long time. But you'll see that that eventually comes back, and now I'm going to switch to another system. I'm going to say, but when I do dir c colon temp, you'll see temp, you'll see recurse. But when I say code signing, it's like, what are you talking about? There's no such thing as code signing, okay? The answer is, ugh, you're killing me, okay? But here, you'll notice, I can say dir c colon temp minus attributes, right? And things like read-only, okay? But if I do this in the certificate drive, attributes. There's no attributes. So what's going on here? And this is something we call dynamic variables, okay, or dynamic parameters. And what's happening is the dir command is a combination of static parameters that apply to everything and dynamic parameters which are sensitive to the file system that it's working against or the provider that it's working against. So when I'm working against the certificate store, it goes and says, oh, I can ask for things like code signing. You can specify that as a parameter. When I work against the registry, I can specify things like directories or attributes. Okay. So then you might say, well, how would you know the differences between these? Oh, you're just killing me. Go away. Okay, so I don't know if you've seen this trick. Here's a great trick. Get command, get child item. So dir is really called get child item, right? It's a different syntax. Okay? Now, remember, we can type get member to explore. Okay? And there's a ton of great stuff here. Now look here, parameters. Yeah, so check this out. So now what I do is I say get child item dot parameters. Okay, and I see all the parameters. Okay, now here, I don't know if you've realized this, but get command actually takes the command and arguments. Okay, so here's this list, right? Notice no code signing, right? Nowhere in that list. Okay, actually, let's do it this way. Have you done this? Dot values. Dot name. Through sort. There you go. Okay, so notice there is no code signing in this. Okay, but here, get command takes the command you want parameters for, and you can also give it a set of arguments. And when you give it the arguments, it evaluates. When you just do get command, you get the static parameters. When you provide it an argument, it will evaluate the arguments and get the dynamic parameters. Is that making any sense? This is crazy stuff. So I give the cert provider. And notice code signing, DNS name, EKU name. Oh, and check this one out. Expiring in days. Yeah, get this up. So is this guy ever going to come back? He's never coming back. You're killing me. Anyway, so here, I'm not going to hit carriage return, but here's what you can do. You can do this. You can say dir cert colon minus recurse, go through the entire thing, minus expiring in days. Oh, you're killing me. Anyway, you can ask for, say, find me all the certs that are going to expire in the next 90 days. And then what you can do is you can use PowerShell remoting to then go say, on every one of my machines, find me all the certs that are going to expire in 90 days. And I bet you the Azure guys really wish they knew that they could have done that. That's an inside joke. They had a major outage because of some complicated thing where one of the certs expired. Anyway, now you were just like one line away for finding all the expiring certs in your environment. Very easy to do. All right, so we're going to go and we're going to start a new one here. Yeah, fine. Okay, so the last thing, I've mentioned three concepts so far. The first is that PowerShell is an interactive shell just like any other interactive shell. By the way, there's a couple exceptions to that. And that is there are certain commands that use the console APIs. This is not the console, okay? And so those won't work in this environment, okay? They'll work in the console, but not here. In general, we discourage those commands, and we're trying to get rid of them and get rid of them, because basically anytime you write to the console, you can't program against it, right? It's like, I don't know if you've ever seen Don Jones, great trainer, and he says, oh, there's two things you can do. One is you can say, write output, hello world, right? And that writes it to the output channel. Or you can do things like write host, foreground red, right? Now that goes directly to the hosting environment and writes it there. And the difference between these two is that the first one, he says, Don Jones says, hey, if you ever do write host, God kills a puppy. Okay, so he's just like brutal about this. God kills a puppy. And the reason why is that you cannot program it. This latter thing is like console APIs, which is to say here, right, I can program against this. I can say for each dot to upper and uppercase it. Whereas here, you can't do that. There's nothing that comes out here. Look here, I'll say get member. And yeah, there's no object. So you can't program against it. So in general, yeah, it's an interactive shell, but we strongly discourage console applications and we're trying to get them rewritten. The second thing I mentioned to you is that we have a regular world, a world of verb noun names, get, dash, process, and then we mentioned providers. And the fourth thing I want to talk about is the programming language. So it's a programming language. Use this as much or as little as you like. You can do it simple stuff, 2 plus 2. Yeah, that works. You can do 2KB plus 2KB. That works. Okay. Now, if you ever notice that, we have direct support for what admins use, right? So the thought was get process pipe to where working set is greater than 10 megabytes sort by working set, right? Well, 10 megabytes. Let's say where the working set's greater than 50 megabytes, okay? And you can do that, right? Because the alternative was, well, let's see what. Now, tell me, did I get the right number of zeros? I have no idea. Does anybody know? Is that like 500,000 or 5 million? I don't know. So what you got to do is you got to sort of like, well, let's see. I put a comma in there and then three more. Okay, so it wasn't. It was 5 million. Who the heck knows? So we support these things, right? So there is 1 KB, 2 MB, 3 GB, 4 PB, 5 TB. What comes after TB? TB and then PB. What comes after PB? Louder. I don't know. E? That doesn't sound right. EB? Apparently we don't support EB. That didn't sound right. Anyway, and you can do math on this stuff, right? 1 plus 2KB plus 3MB plus 4GB plus 5TB plus 6PB. Okay, and if I'm wrong, let me know. I'll fix it. But I'm pretty sure that's right. Anyway, so we directly support that stuff, okay? But then also, as I say, it's this nice, very compositional model, right? So I could have said 2 plus, and then we have this notion of parameter substitution or command substitution. Command substitution says that when you see these parentheses on a command line or in the program, execute those first and take the output and put it in and then evaluate the rest of it, okay? So if I wanted to, I could have said, 2. Okay, that's fine, but why did I do that? Alternatively, what I can do is I can say read host minus prompt number to add to 2. And again, what happens is 2 plus and this parentheses, I run the thing in parentheses first. It's asking me some value. I'll say 100. It then takes the value of what got run and puts it in the expression and continues it. So 2 plus the output of that, 100, 102. Okay? So then we have get date. Okay, so that's kind of fun, right? Get date. What I wanted to point out here was that show. Where am I? GJC, TechNet. I'm going to use Lee's command again against get date. And this is just a blast. So get date, it looks like just, you get the date, right? Just a simple little thing. But in fact, this thing's a beast, right? You got the date time. You got the day of the week. Oh, it's Tuesday. The day of the year, the hour, the number of milliseconds. And then check this out. Come up here. I don't know if you can see this. Right? But here it's showing you the methods, right? Add days, add hours, add minutes, add seconds. There's one here, compared to, I think there's a is leap year. There you go. Is daylight savings time. There's something about leap year here. So let's find that one. So here's the problem. I know that there's something about leap year. I don't remember what it is. So I'm going to type get date, type 2, get member. And it had something to do with leap year. And I'm wrong. Is daylight savings time? I thought there was a leap year. Anyway, so the point of this is I can then do things like $x equals, you can cast parameters, date time. Sorry, I'll do it this way. Get date, $x dot, day of the week, x dot, day of the year, okay? So really rich, powerful stuff. Now, we have this notion of casting and coercion. PowerShell is very strong in this notion of casting coercion. If you take a look, so what motivated us? We took a look at a lot of scripts, a lot of VB scripts, we wrote a lot of code ourselves, and the observation was that so much of programming is just like dealing with all the crap, you know? Like, this thing, I called this thing, and it gave me one of these, and this guy needs one of those, and so I got to do all this, like, and do all that work. And it's a whole bunch of, like, not fun code, it's a bunch of crap. And so you see in PowerShell, we try and deal with all that crap for you, right, so that you don't have to deal with that. And this is what we call, we break the impedance mismatch between the components. And so I talked to you about this PowerShell pipeline. But what really happens is, underneath the covers, that pipeline is an object flow engine. Okay, complicated technology. It actually is, but it simplifies things. So what happens is, when you type A, pipe to B, pipe to C, we map those symbols to executable units that run in process, and we create what's called a directed graph of these things. How do they run? And we run one until it emits data, and then we take a look at that data, and we take a look at the next guy, and we figure out what that guy needs. And then we do whatever's required to that data to manipulate it to meet his contract, and then run it, and then do it again and again and again. Okay, so we deal with all this impedance mismatch. So what that means is, there's quite a bit of magic to PowerShell, and it's magic in a good way. So imagine I say, hey, I have some string, 12, 25, 2013, okay? Okay, but that's a string. What am I going to do with that, right? Pipe that to get member, and you see there's just a bunch of string things to it, right? I can do dot two upper, two upper, well, whatever. There's not many interesting things I can do to this thing. But what I can do is I can cast it to a date time. Okay? And when I cast it to a date time, it becomes magical. It becomes a date time. And then if I assign that to a variable, that'll assign x equals that, then all of a sudden I can do all that wonderful stuff, day of the week. Okay? Wonderful, powerful stuff. Now, here's an interesting trick. In PowerShell, our variables, we have this, basically we support any model you like, right? So at some level, you can be as loosey-goosey as you want in terms of a programming language. Here, $x, well, let's see. First, I said $x, let's do it this way. $x. $x is a string here. $x.getType. It's a string. Here, I do this, and it's a date time. So that x can take on different types. In other languages, that's not really possible. In other languages, you have to declare the type of the variable, and then it can only declare that. Now, there's some value to that, but it's also sometimes a pain in the butt. So if you want to, you can do that. You could have said $x. Sorry, you declare it this way. You say date time. Datetime $x equals 12/25/2013. Now notice the difference. Here I put the datetime on the right side of the equal sign, and here I put it in front of the parameter. Okay? So now it works, you know, just the same as ever. But now when I go and try and put something that's not a datetime in there, like some string, it says, hey, no, I can't convert that to a datetime. So you can be as rigid and formal as you want, or as informal and ad hoc as you like. Okay. Now the downside of this is, now I got this $x, and I can, you know, what can I do? I can't reuse it for anything other than datetimes. So here's a trick. Here's a trick. You'll like this one. How do I get rid of that $x? Right? How do I get rid of it? And the answer is, irk. I don't know. So remember, get PS drive. Look here. Variable. So wait a second, variable. So you think maybe that $x is in the variable drive? Dir variable x. And there it is. Okay? Now, what did I say? I said the great thing about PowerShell's modules or drives was that you can interact with them the same way you interact with file systems. Okay? So I have this variable X that I want to get rid of, and I can't get rid of it because how do I get rid of it? Because I've cast it to some type, right? I now want to set it to a string, and I can't because it's cast as that. So if you have a file that you want to get rid of, how do you get rid of that? Well, right. You say delete variable X. And guess what? Dollar sign X is gone. And now if I want to, I can set it to a variable or anything. Right? So, fun stuff. By the way, this is really cool stuff, the variable drive. So, let's explore that a little. Right? So first imagine, let's be clear. I say dollar sign z, 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 z equals wow. And I do dir variable. And there it is. Wow. Okay? So now let's go into this drive. Cd variable. Okay? Sorry, vd variable. And there's just a ton of great stuff there. Dir z star. Dir star. Okay. Now, let's see. Let's do this. Dir. So I mentioned to you that that we are object-oriented system. So these variables are objects, right? And so here it looks like that you have the name and the value. But remember I said that what happens is you emit objects, and they're full objects until they reach the host. And then the host picks a convention for displaying them. And what happens is we have a number of formatting files that say, hey, you know, if I gave you everything, you know, back to that movie, you know, you can't handle the truth. You can't handle the truth because it's like way too complex. There's way too much going on. So what we do is we pick the things we think are going to be most interesting to you, and we show you that. But underneath the covers, there's a ton there. Now, you might think, well, variables. What could be behind variables, right? You got a name and you got a data, right? That's the deal. What do you mean? No, my friends. This is PowerShell. Notice the word power in PowerShell. Okay, it's powerful. So what's that mean? Okay, well, look here. You're going to do a dir pipe to get member. And look at this. Look at all these properties. Attributes, description, module, name, options, etc. Visibility. Like what? Really? So let's take a look at that. Let's do dir pipe to format list star. Just to get a feel for this. Hold on. So look at all this stuff. Okay, oh, well, look at here. Description dictates the action taken when a warning variable is delivered. What's that? That's for warning preference. So wait a second. So the variables have descriptions. Let's explore this some. Okay, so now let's go and we'll do a dir again. And what we're going to do is we're going to select the name and the description. Again, I can't spell. And we're going to do outgrid view. Outgrid view is this great tool to show stuff. And look here. Right? Oops, sorry. So let's sort this. So what it's showing you is all these objects have description. Dictates action when debug is delivered. Dictates what type of prompt should be displayed for the current nesting level. Wow. Execution of the latest command. Oh, did you see that? Execution of the latest command. Execution status of the last command. Dollar sign question mark. This is crazy stuff. Anyway, so there's a bunch of great stuff there. Now, also notice there were things like, let's see, visibility, value. Let's do, let me see, some of the other ones there. Oh, anyway, there's a ton of stuff there. Go have some fun with that. Now, has anybody ever written a PowerShell script where you use parameters with validation attributes? Okay, so there's this really nice thing in PowerShell when you're writing a script, right? You can say function T, and you can say, hey, I want to have a parameter, dollar sign test, and I would like to have a validation set validation. I can never remember these. Validate set. A, B, C. I'll say write output. The value of test is $test. Okay, so let's be clear what I just did here. So I wrote this function t. Run it. And what I said was I have a variable, a parameter test, and the function outputs the value of test. And what I'm saying is, hey, it can only be one of these three values. So if I say TA, happy, TB, happy, TC, happy, TD, yeah, it's got to be one of those things. So in PowerShell, there are these great things called these validators, and they are just powerful. So you just go explore them. A ton of fun. But did you realize that starting in PowerShell version 3, now you can take those validation attributes and apply them to variables? Yeah, check it out. So now I can say, hey, $x. Remember $x? Okay, so now again, I'm going to remove that puppy. Remove item. Let's say del, variable x. Get rid of that. Now what I'm going to do is I'm going to say this. Validate set. $x. Equals A. $x. That's great. $x equals B. Happy. C. Happy. D. Not happy. Whoa! That's crazy stuff. So what this means is, you know, PowerShell as a programming language, we intentionally wanted to have it be this incredible dynamic range from very loose, very ad hoc-y, very admin-oriented, all the way through systems programming, and you can get very, very sophisticated with it. Now, at the end of the day, what do you do? And the answer is whatever you want to. You know, find your own level. Our goal here, in the past, right, a lot of people, I don't know if you were one of them, but a number of people tried to pick up PowerShell and PowerShell version 1 or 2, and they found it heavy lifting. And the reason was, again, we're trying to create a world where you think about what you want, you type it, and you get it. And if commandlets exist, you can do that. If commandlets don't exist, then you got to do something else. And often, in versions 1 and 2, there weren't very many commandlets, so you had to go do a bunch of programming yourself. Now with PowerShell version 3, we have over 2,400 commandlets. In PowerShell version 4, there's over 3,000 commandlets. So by and large, you know, the things you want to think, type, and get are available. And then you script when you need to or when you want to. And when you script, you can be as informal and ad hoc-y and lightweight as you want, or you can get as sophisticated as you want. A number of people have written very rich, sophisticated GUIs using PowerShell. So it's up to you. It's your choice. Lots of fun. All right. Okay. Oh, that guy finally came back. What a deal. All right. So now, here, so we have a full range of expressions, you know, in the PowerShell language, right? So you got for loops, for $i equals 0, $i less than 10, $i plus plus, if $i modulo 2, give me the i, right? So just get the odds. Okay, so you got rich programming capabilities. Okay, so those were the four things. Interactive shell, get command, drives, it's a programming language. That's our start. Now let's have some fun. This is how you learn PowerShell, right? Get help. Get help is your friend. There are lots of great books out there. Don Jones has books. Lee has books. There are lots of great books out there. However, the PowerShell in and of itself has fantastic help, and I think people get books a little bit too soon. You really ought to go explore the help. It's one of the best ways to learn PowerShell. Now, starting with PowerShell version 3, we no longer ship the help on the box. It's an updatable thing. And let's hope my network is working. What you do is, actually, we'll do just one. OK, get module, get command, get process. Okay. So what you can do is, and the whole point of this is that you only install the help on the systems you want the help, like where you're going to run PowerShell. So often you're running PowerShell on servers, you know, remote servers, and you don't want the help on those remote servers. Just increases the footprint, et cetera. You want it where you're going to invoke PowerShell on the client machines, reaching out to those machines. And also, what happens is, in the past, we had to have the help done before the code was done. And then as you guys went and said, oh, you know, you got a problem, you missed this in your help, we'd say, yeah, oh, thank you so much for telling us about that. Hang in there 3 years. We release in 3 years, and we'll fix that. Well, what the heck's that, right? That's crap. And so now what we do is we have a model of continuous publishing. As you find problems and tell us about those problems, we constantly update the help, and therefore it's a good best practice to update your help every couple weeks or every month, okay, because you'll get fresh help. And the way you do that is you say update help minus module, and here you specify the module. Typically use a wildcard. I'm just going to grab this one. Minus force, minus verbose. And associated with each one of the modules is a help URL. We then grab that URL, go grab the content, download it, and install it. Now you might say, okay, it looks like our network's going to give us some fun. You might say, okay, but what about for machines that, there we go, what about for machines that aren't connected to the internet? We thought about that, of course. And so what you can do is you grab a machine that is available on the network, you grab all the help, store it in a USB key, then you go to the machine and say update the help from the USB key. Okay, so pretty simple stuff. So anyway, the help is all there. Now help comes in lots of different formats. So let's just say help. By the way, I don't know if you knew this. So sometimes I type get help and sometimes I type help. I don't know if you knew this, but we have this command disambiguation rule. So basically what happens is when you type something, we figure out how to map it to something that can execute. Anyway, one of the rules is if you type something and I can't find something to execute, put a get in front of it and see if that works. Like literally, right? So get, if I just type help, there's no thing called help. So eventually it says, well, stick get in front of it and see if that works. So let's see if that's true. Process. Oh, what are you killing me? Oh, that's something else. Disk. Get disks. VM. Translates to get VM. Anyway, so that's one of the tricks. Anyway, so I'm going to type help. Now, help shows up, blah, 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 goes in line. Well, that's kind of a pain in the butt, right? Because, well, where is it, et cetera. And so one of the techniques you can do in here is you can say help minus show window. Oh, that's nice. So it's in a window. And look at this. Nice thing about this is you can zoom it up. You can search for things. Right? Next, next, next. And then there's a set of settings here, what things you want to see, etc. So really quite nice. The downside with this is, so let's say I'm down here and it shows me, let's see. Oh, here's the thing. It shows you how to download and install the help. That's good. That's useful. I need that. And then there are some examples, updatable help, help, get help about topic, help a search term, help online. Okay, so let's say I wanted to do that. Let's say get help about topic. Now notice the window's up there, right? It's in the way. Now it turns out on a multi-screen monitor, this is just perfect. You know, you put this on one screen and then you have your command line interface on the other and things just work. But for this environment, it's kind of a pain in the butt. So let me show you a trick I use all the time. I just love it. So what I do is I type help, and then clip. Okay, sends it to the clipboard, type control N for new, and then paste, and then you have the help here. Right? And so then I say, okay, great. Now I was going to say, get help about, and I'll say star. Okay, so there, my help's still here, but now I'm able to operate against things in a very useful way. Anyway, so take a look at these help things. I mean, look at them all. I mean, well, how many are there? Well, let's see, measure. So we get 104 about topics. It's about WQL. Anybody ever use WQL? Like powerful stuff, crazy powerful stuff. I can never for the life of me remember the syntax of WQL, just like not happening. And I've tried a few times. And then you say, well, it's out there on the web. Good luck with that. Sometimes it is. Sometimes, I don't know. Maybe you have better luck than I. It seems like about half the times I can find the WQL examples, half the time I can't. Well, here, there they are. Help about WQL. Type it into the clip. Paste it here. Bonk. And there's all your details about WQL. Oh, let's see. Oh, by the way, the nice thing about the help is it gives you all these great examples, right? So let's just grab this thing. Let's grab this, put it in a file, clean this up a little bit. By the way, did you know about this one? Here we go. This block select. Let's see if I get this right. How do I do this? It says block select. So is it, was it shift alt? Is that right? Yeah, there you go. Shift alt, then delete. Shift alt. Oh, there you go. So shift alt and then click does block select. So I delete that thing. Anyway, so now I'll select this thing and hit F8 to evaluate it. And now, and then I run this and F8. Anyway, I have no idea what's going to happen with that one. Anyway, so, I mean, this is the benefit of the help system. You do it in clipboard. You paste it somewhere. You go in, you grab the examples, and you can begin to execute them directly. And obviously, that was a mistake. By the way, do you know about run spaces? So, remember, I was in this run space, and something I got into trouble. And so I created this other environment. It's a clean slate. That's called a run space. Okay, PowerShell, things run. You know, names exist in namespaces. Things run in run spaces. Okay, and so these run spaces are where you run things. And so if I want to, I just type Control T and I create a new run space. Now this is a clean slate. It's completely separate from the other environments. I'm just sharing the same user screen. Okay, so then when I say help pipe to clip, paste. You know, that other thing could be hung in the back. Doesn't matter. I just go here and party on. Okay? So now, there's also this, check this out, get help minus online. So I run that. And what happens is, it brings it up in a browser. Okay? So those are the three things I want you to remember about help. Minus, you know, update the help, show window, pipe it to the clipboard, and minus online. So great, great and powerful stuff. Okay, that never came back. Okay. Now, there's get help, and then there's get command. And these sort of look the same, but they're quite a bit different. Get help is very much, so let's do get help for get process. Okay, and we'll put this to the clipboard. Now let's look at this in totality. Okay. So it shows you the name, the synopsis, the syntax, the description, and related links. Okay. And by the way, it also shows you, you know, other things you might want to go look at. So that's great, except there's more to it. I can say minus detailed. Now, when I do that, now look what I get. Okay? So I get the name, the synopsis, the syntax, the description, but now look at the parameters. I get detailed information about each one of the parameters, the name, the type, and a description. Okay, that's very cool. But then I also get examples, and these examples are really worth playing with. I mean, we spend some time on these things. So get process, type the format. Look at this. Oh, and here's that greater than, and here's one. Look at this one. Get process PowerShell, computer name, this machine and that machine, formatted by, and look at all these expressions. I mean, there's a ton to chew on there. Go party on with that. Oh, have you seen this one? Get process minus file version number. Do you know this one? So this one's cool. So imagine I say get process PowerShell. PowerShell. Okay? I could have said minus file version info. Right? Check that out. So it's telling me where those processes came from. So when you look at a process list, you wonder where do those things come from? That's where they came from. Oh, you want to see another cool trick? GPS. Let's see. What do we got here? Let's do calc. Start a calc. I mentioned to you, okay, you want to, like, we're going to slow down a second and kind of walk you through this one. This one's a little freaky. So remember I talked to you about the object pipeline. I said, oh, well, here, first let me set it up, and then we'll talk about it. Let's say get process calc pipe 2 dir. Okay, what the heck is that going to do? So I mentioned to you that when you type something out, we map these things to these commandlets, and we set up this object flow engine between them. And so here we have two things in our object flow: get process, which takes a parameter calc, and directory. Yeah, directory. So what is it? So when I run get process, I'm going to get a process object. I'm going to pipe a process object to directory. What the heck's that going to do? Well, remember what I said is we hand it to the pipeline engine, the PowerShell engine, and we take a look at what this guy requires, and then we take a look at the thing we have, and we do all the work to try and figure out how to make those things work. So the first thing we do is we say, I've got this process object. Does that guy accept a process object? Because if so, I hand it to it directly, and that's the fastest, most efficient thing you can do. And directory does not take process objects, so that ain't going to work. The next thing we do is we say, okay, well, this object here, does it have any parameters which can accept values from properties of the existing object? Okay, so this is the difference between what's called is a binding, I bind things that are something, versus has a binding. And what happens is there's a ton of things. It increases the flexibility with this has a binding. So dir says, yeah, I'll bind to any object that has a property called path. Well, it turns out that process objects have something called path of the executable. So what we'll do is we'll say, okay, well, you take a path. He has a path. I'll just grab his path, the value. I'll give it to you, and I throw the rest of the object away. And I'll say dir minus path and the value. And that's why you can do get process pipe to dir. Is that freaky or what? I mean, pretty powerful stuff. Pretty powerful. So we got get help, we have get command. Get command is a little bit different than get help. Get command, let's see. Okay, get command shows you a ton of stuff. And notice, I don't know if you noticed there, I'm flying by, I had commandlets, and I had functions, and I just got a ton of stuff there. So what were those things? By the way, one of the techniques is to pick something small and then expand. So get command, let's just say A something. I got a bunch of them too. What the heck is this thing? I think it's a commandlet type. Ugh, it's brutal. Okay, so what I'm going to say is get command. I'm going to group them by what? Commandlet type. Okay, so get command, you got aliases, you have functions, you have filters, and you have commandlets. These are all commands. Now, the nice thing about get command is it's a pretty rich tool. You can get commands by name, but you can also find things by parameter type, a parameter. So what you can do is you can say get command, find me all the commands that have a parameter name as job. And you can go, and each one of these commandlets has an as job parameter. Now you might want to wonder, hey, back to this pipelining, if you took a look at get process, up to get member, it emits an object of type systems diagnostic process. So you might wonder, hey, what things can I pipe one of those things to? So what you can do is you can say get command minus property type system.diagnostic process. And those are the commands that accept parameters of type system.diagnostic process. Anyway, there's a ton more to this. I really only scratched the surface. The key things that I wanted you to walk away with are really a sense of exploration and a sense of fun with PowerShell. It's a blast to do it. There's a ton behind the scenes. Somebody asked me, when will people really understand all that's in PowerShell version 3? I said, because PowerShell version 3 was a vast release. I said, my friend, very few people understand a fraction of the things that we delivered in PowerShell version 1. There's a ton of stuff there. And when you go do your job, maybe you need this stuff, maybe you don't. You don't have to. But it is a lot of fun, so feel free to go out there and explore. In general, remember, we started with this idea of the Unix admins. And how when you took Unix admins and you gave them a written test, there really wasn't that much difference. But you put them in front of a machine, and there was this huge difference. And that's what I tried to show you, is there's a set of techniques that you need to learn. Get help. Get member. Get PS Drive. Explore, explore, explore. And these techniques you'll be able to use to explore the system, and when novel problems come up, you'll be able to use these techniques to figure out how to solve the problems. So with that, I hope you enjoyed this session. We do pay attention to all the comments on the evaluation form, so I appreciate it if you would fill them out. And with that, have a great tech ed.